Good morning, and may it please the Court, my name is Jennifer Ballard on behalf of the defendant appellant Nora Penaloza. Your Honors, this case begs the question, at what point does the admission of so-called background evidence interfere with the defendant's right to a fair trial? It's Ms. Penaloza's contention that that is precisely what occurred in her case, and that the district court erred when it admitted highly prejudicial evidence proffered by the government under the guise of background information, and that the consequences of this error were so pervasive that it tainted the entire trial such that her conviction for attempt to possess with intent to distribute in excess of 5 kilograms of cocaine should be reversed or alternatively reversed.
The evidence was overwhelming, wasn't it, the evidence of guilt? But what difference would this make?
No, Your Honor. The government had nine recorded...
She admitted it, right? She admitted she knew it was cocaine.
Your Honor, your question speaks to the alleged confession in this matter made by the government's witness, Agent Brazow. And while, yes, the government did present evidence, testimony concerning an alleged confession, Ms. Penaloza emphatically denied ever confessing in this case. So we're dealing with an issue of weight.
You're right. Her confession, the testimony of the police officer could be disbelieved. That's true. But when you put everything together, you criticize this, but the sound of the zipper, right? She's inspecting the drugs and so on. All together, it's very strong evidence.
Your Honor, respectfully, I disagree. There are nine recorded telephone conversations.
They're pretty suspicious, those conversations.
Your Honor, they're only suspicious to the extent the government is able to prove beyond a reasonable doubt that Ms. Penaloza understood this very intricate drug language. The term that Ms. Penaloza uses in the recording conversations is Yavez. Yes, there is evidence that was presented that Yavez in certain contexts may mean keys. However, there was also evidence presented that in other contexts, Yavez may mean faucets or wrenches. So we're dealing with a situation where you have to convince the jury beyond a reasonable doubt that Ms. Penaloza understood this very intricate drug code to get from Yavez to keys to kilograms of cocaine.
What's the alternative translation?
Yavez may mean wrenches or faucets. And Ms. Penaloza testified that she believed that she was going to Chicago to pick up certain tools and parts for her brother, who was an auto mechanic in Canada. So to translate Yavez as wrenches or faucets in that context is very well plausible. The major issue with the overwhelming evidence or testimony concerning the Gutierrez investigation is that at the time of Ms. Penaloza's trial, that investigation had not gone to trial. Gutierrez had not been tried. So we're dealing with a situation where there's evidence that presented in Ms. Penaloza's case as fact that at the time was just mere allegations against Mr. Gutierrez. This left Ms. Penaloza and her counsel without any means or mechanism to refute these statements or even investigate the statements that were used against her. The other problem is that the district court specifically ruled in its denial of the government's Santiago proffer that it found no evidence for a basis for the government to conclude that a conspiracy or joint venture of any kind existed between Penaloza and Gutierrez. And yet, in spite of this very explicit ruling by the trial court, the government was able to present Agent Elias, who testified in great detail as to a nearly year-long investigation of George Gutierrez, spanning from specifically 200 kilograms of cocaine from Mexico to Colombia to Spain, and then the 70 that finally made its way to the United States. We have to look at what is the point of all this? Where was the government going with this? And it again goes back to they had to paint the picture of Ms. Penaloza being a sophisticated drug trafficker.
How much time in the trial did that occupy?
Your Honor, Agent Elias's testimony spanned over 7 pages of trial transcripts. However,
well, that doesn't sound like a great deal.
Well, Your Honor, the cases that the government cited in its reply brief dealt with situations where we're talking about a mere statement or two. In this case, again, we're dealing with 7 pages of trial testimony. Who knows how many minutes that translates into, but definitely more than a statement or two, as in the government's cases. Our case is also distinguished from the cases cited by the government in that First, I want to point out that none of the cases are cases from the circuit. The government argues that background evidence is routinely granted, and I find no such case that says that. In fact, the Cromar case that the government cites, while it does say that in certain instances, information, out-of-court statements may be offered for the limited purpose of explaining why an investigation was initiated. That Cromar case also reversed and remanded the defendant's conviction based upon certain background evidence that the court found to be a, quote, sham, in that it went to the very heart of the prosecution's case. And that is exactly what we're dealing with here. In essence, the government was able to backdoor its denial of the Santiago proffer and get all of this information in. To be clear, Ms. Penaloza is not saying that background evidence should never be permitted in the case, but in this case, the government's evidence and the testimony that was presented far exceeded any right that they would have to set up the initial communication. I also want to mention that to the extent that this court feels that the background evidence that was presented was granted in the motion in limine, certainly the evidence of the testimony that came out concerning the communication between Penaloza and Gutierrez after the cocaine, sham cocaine, had been loaded in her car is clearly not background evidence. That is not set out in the defendant's motion, the government's motion in limine, and it can only go to the point of establishing some sort of association or connection between Ms. Penaloza and Mr. Gutierrez. I mean, in effect, what the government did was a controlled transaction and then put Ms. Penaloza on the phone with this international drug lord to suggest to the jury that they had some sort of relationship and that they were in cahoots in terms of this transaction for which she was being charged. Ms. Penaloza is in no way trying to run away from any of the government's evidence presented in this case. She simply just wants to be tried on the charges against her and not on these charges against Mr. Gutierrez. We argue in our briefs.
The government says that this background information took up only 4 pages in the transcript.
Respectfully, Your Honor, I disagree. The trial transcript clearly shows that Agent Brazel's testimony started on, I believe it was page 116 of the trial transcript and goes for 7 pages. It starts out discussing the initial communications with Mr. Gutierrez, the 200 kilograms of cocaine worth $1.4 million. All of this is unnecessary and irrelevant to the charges against Ms. Penaloza.
Well, she had 70 kilograms. That's a huge amount. So does it really make a difference that it was part of 200?
It does make a difference to the extent that Ms. Penaloza denies that she was ever communicating about cocaine in any sort. She thought she was picking up tools
that's
and wrenches.
True, but that's true. But the question is, how prejudiced would she be by the fact that that the 70 was part of a larger shipment?
The 70 being part of the larger shipment goes to the extent of the Gutierrez international drug operation. It started as 200.
Go ahead.
It's not the number that is at issue. It's the extent of the operation. The government testified as to the reason why the 200 kilograms, they couldn't find a buyer in Spain who had enough money to pay for that, and so they kept the 70 kilograms as collateral, brought it to the United States, and were searching for a buyer. And all of the evidence that came out in trial suggested that Nora Penaloza was the buyer that the government that Gutierrez was looking for. That's the heart of this case, is her knowledge as to whether she was discussing cocaine in her communications with the undercover agent. And the
government's theory is not that she was the buyer of the 70 kilograms.
Well, that she was to transport the 70 kilograms. The presentation of the evidence suggested that in any realm that Ms. Penaloza had some sort of association with this international drug conspirator, whether that was as buyer or transporter, it doesn't really matter, because the jurors were told that she knew this drug code. When she said Yavez, she meant keys, and that means cocaine. And again, the district court specifically said that they found no basis to find that any type of conspiracy or joint venture existed between Penalozzo and Gutierrez. So you see, when you look at Agent Elias's testimony, this is precisely the information that the district court barred in its Santiago proffer. To the extent that I see that my time is up. Are there any further questions?
Okay, thanks, Ms. Bowen. Mr. Kubiatowski?
May it please the Court. Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Steve Kubiatowski, representing the United States. I'll just address the appellant's points seriatim. With respect to the interpretation of the phrase keys, the defense's own expert in the Spanish language admitted on the stand during cross-examination that our interpretation of llaves as keys, given the context of the conversations, was the correct interpretation. With respect to appellant's point, what was the point in soliciting this background information? What was the reason that the government filed the motion in limine to flag this issue for the court? Well, the reason is the government wanted to make sure that the jury didn't think that we picked a phone number out of the phone book, used names like Elabardo and Chavello, and talked about the number 70 or keys just at random. There was a reason that the government took the steps it did, which led to its initial contact with Miss Penalozzo. The government did not dwell on this information. It did not focus it on it in any way after the, and I counted it at 4 pages in the transcript, perhaps 7, but regardless, Agent Elias' testimony during the course of this trial was well over 120, 130 pages. The government simply focused on the information set forth in its motion in limine and did not attempt to circumvent the court's ruling in any way. With respect to Ms. Penalozzo's statements at the very end of the transaction on November 9, 2006, appellant suggests that we were characterizing this as background evidence. We never made any such characterization. These were the defendant's own admissions at the end of a drug deal, which the government argued is part of a natural, what you would expect when 70 kilograms of cocaine are exchanging hands. The undercover agent wanted to make sure that the broker was informed by the courier that the deal had been struck. Otherwise, there's always the risk of a ripoff. That was part of his cover. With respect to the other issues regarding the post-arrest statement or the constructive indictment, unless there are any, we'll rest on our briefs. Unless there are any further questions by the court, we'll yield the remainder of our time.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Kubitas. Ms. Ballard, your time has expired, but we'll give you a minute if you have anything further you want to tell us.
I just want to address this final communication after the transaction had been completed in the parking lot. At trial, Agent Elias testified that after he exchanged goodbyes with Ms. Penalozzo, he attempted to call Mr. Gutierrez so that he could tell him that the transaction had been completed because he had other dealings with Mr. Gutierrez that he wanted to continue. This was not a communication that was at all initiated by Ms. Penalozzo. The agent also told Ms. Penalozzo, just tell him that I took care of you. That is exactly what Ms. Penalozzo said in her brief conversation with him. Again, there are 9 recorded conversations. There are no admissions in any of these recorded communications of any sort. And Ms. Penalozzo is simply asking that she be granted a new trial so that she can be tried on her activity alone. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Ballard. And you were appointed, were you not? Well, we thank you for your efforts on behalf of your client, and we thank Mr. Kubiatowski as well.